Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 234, being recorded on July 2nd of the year 2000. It's entitled Tales of the Amber Room. Now, the Amber Room was an ornate room decorated entirely with amber that was given by Prussian King Frederick William to Tsar Peter the Great, and ultimately it became part of the large amount of Nazi booty that was looted by the Third Reich and then disappeared at the end of World War II. It has been the subject of a number of inquiries, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to begin with discussion from the San Jose Mercury News of Friday, April 28th of the year 2000. This is an AP story datelined Moscow. It's headlined, Germany Returning Russian Treasure. It reads in part as follows. One of two pieces known to still exist from Peter the Great's famed Amber Room was returned by Germany on Thursday, more than half a century after being stolen by retreating Nazi troops, the Itar TASS news agency reported. The piece, an elaborate mosaic of amber, came to Moscow aboard a special plane, also carrying German Culture Minister Michael Naumann, the agency reported. Naumann is to turn over the mosaic and a chest of drawers from the room in a ceremony Saturday at the Ekaterinsky Palace outside St. Petersburg, the royal residence that once included the room. The chest of drawers was to arrive in Russia separately, the report said. The 18th-century amber room got its name from the magnificent panels of golden-brown amber that lined its walls. The furnishings were presented by Prussian King Frederick William to Tsar Peter the Great. Nazi soldiers looted the palace in World War II and stripped the amber room bare as they retreated from their failed campaign against Stalinist Russia. The room's contents were moved to a castle in Königsberg, now the Russian city of Kaliningrad, and disappeared from there in 1945. The German woman who bought the chest recognized it in a television report and turned it over to authorities in 1997. It is not known how much she paid for it. The Amber Room has actually been a subject of inquiry for quite some time, and the post-World War II Nazi underground, and according to a report that we're about to look at, the remarkable and deadly Bormann Organization was among the institutions that looked into that. We're going to be taking a look now, in fact the remainder of the broadcast is going to be excerpted from a book called Quest, subtitled Searching for the Truth of Germany's Nazi Past. It was co-authored by Frank Brandenburg, Brandenburg, a young German gentleman, and Ib Melchior, Melchior, a former agent with the OSS, the U.S. World War II Intelligence Agency. The book was published in soft cover by the Presidio Press and copyright 1990. And in our discussion of the Amber Room, we're going to begin by taking a look at an encounter between Frank Brandenburg and a German gun dealer named Medard Klapper, a veteran of the Third Reich. Now, Frank Brandenburg had been interested in the history of the Third Reich and whether or not the concentration camps actually existed. He began visiting with and researching the backgrounds of top Nazi officials who were still alive in the Federal Republic. He eventually befriended the former SS General Karl Wolff, Himmler's personal adjutant, and was given by Karl Wolff his personal SS ring, which served as something of an entree into the post-World War II Nazi underground. And while speaking with Medard Klapper, last name K-L-A-P-P-E-R, Frank Brandenburg came across one of the Bormann group, also known to Medard Klapper, allegedly, as the Maribor Soul, and we're going to hear about this. Outside of the seminal work by Paul Manning, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, published by Lyle Stewart and copyright 1981, this is one of the very few works that mentions the Bormann group. The discussion begins here with discussion of the Serail documents, S-E-R-A-I-L. These were documents that had been penned by Adolf Hitler and that were part of the legacy to his post-World War II successors for rebuilding the Third Reich. The discussion begins with Klapper's account of recovering the Serail documents from a crash in the former East Germany in the Russian-occupied zone of Germany after World War II. As I was saying, Klapper picked up where he had stopped, it was shortly after the war. I was contacted by the Bormann group and ordered to help arrange for the recovery of certain documents, about a dozen crates, I was told, that were hidden in Dresden, in the zone occupied by the Russians, unquote. The Serail documents, Frank thought. With growing excitement, he asked, What do you know about those documents? Only that they had been aboard a plane that had crashed, and that they had been salvaged from the plane and hidden in Dresden. The Bormann Group instructed me that they were of the utmost importance, that under no circumstances must they be allowed to fall into Russian hands or any of the other enemy allies, that they must be recovered by us, unquote. And they were? They were. By you? Not actively, Klopper said. His eyes shifted toward the window and back. I was the Vermittler, the agent for the operation, unquote. What happened? Asked Frank. Exactly what was supposed to happen, Klopper said testily. The documents were retrieved and sent to Madrid, to the Bormann Group, unquote. Frank felt enormously keyed up. Here was what he had been seeking. Here was the answer to what had happened to the Sorrel documents. They had been sent to Madrid. They were in the hands of a Bormann Group. That Bormann Group, he said. What can you tell me about that? They still have their headquarters in Madrid, Klopper told him. Today, it is the Maribor Sol, and, by the way, Maribor Sol is spelled capital M-A-R-I-B-O-R-S-O-L, beginning again. They still have their quarters in Madrid, Klopper told him. Today, it is the Maribor Sol, and he suddenly stopped and gave Frank a sharp look. You are familiar with Maribor Sol, he asked. I have heard of such an organization, Frank lied, but no, Herr Klopper, I am not familiar with it. Neither General Wolf nor General Bauer mentioned it to me. By the way, Bauer is Hans Bauer, Hitler's personal pilot. Continuing. Klopper nodded sagely. They would not know, he said. They were not among the active. There was no reason for them to know, unquote. For a moment, Klopper studied him. His eyes once more darted quickly to his shop and then back to Frank. Such knowledge could be dangerous for you to possess, he said, finally, an ominous tone to his voice. I presume you realize that. Nevertheless, Herr Klopper, it is necessary to my work that I know. Klopper nodded. The name is, of course, an acronym. Marie for Martin, Bor for Bormann, and Sol, the Spanish word for sun. Again he smiled. The rising sun of our cause, he said. Maribor Sol. Unquote. And the purpose? To ensure that the future will be ours, Klopper said earnestly. The financial matters, for instance. And they are considerable, even on a world scale. Real estate, manufacturing plants, all kinds of profitable investments and business ventures controlled by our people, the people of Maribor Sol, both old and new. Once again, this will be recognizable to veteran listeners as a description of the Bormann organization. Repeating this last paragraph. And the purpose? To ensure that the future will be ours, Klopper said earnestly. The financial matters, for instance. And they are considerable, even on a world scale. Real estate, manufacturing plants, all kinds of profitable investments and business ventures controlled by our people, the people of Maribor Sol, both old and new, unquote. Again he smiled his disconcerting smile. Such as you, Nichtvar? Not so? Frank treated it as a rhetorical question and said nothing. Klopper continued, quote, and to guard the papers and documents handed down to us from the Fuhrer and the Third Reich to guide us, Klopper went on, again quoting, such as the contents of the crates recovered from concealment in Dresden. The reporters of the popular press have coined the phrase, the Fourth Reich. We do not mind. It will be our Reich. The future will be ours. Martin Bormann himself may not live to see the organization that bears his name become triumphant, he finished. But triumphant, it will be, unquote. Frank stared at the man. The Sorrel documents, he thought, the Bornersdorf cash. It may hold a blueprint for the future, a future patterned after the ideology of Adolf Hitler. Now he knew what had happened to them. They had become the guiding gospel of the new Nazi movement. The Reichsleiter is convinced of that, Klopper said. Frank picked up. Is, hair clopper, then Martin Bormann did not die in Berlin? In that tank explosion, he is still alive? He was excited. Here might be real corroboration of what had happened to Martin Bormann. Clapper looked at him as if he had suddenly turned into a simpering idiot. Abruptly, he cackled a dry laugh. Tank explosion, he snorted. Even the driver of that tank survived. He still lives somewhere in the south of Germany. Certainly Martin Bormann. He leaned conspiratorially toward Frank, quote, I myself had the honor of meeting the Reichsleiter in Spain. When, asked Frank? Less than 4 years ago, in 1982, unquote. Frank asked again, are you certain it was Martin Bormann? Clapper gave him a stiff look, obviously taking affront. Of course, he said curtly. He was introduced to me. Besides, I had seen him many times when I served in the Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler, and I recognized him and his voice. It was the Reichsleiter himself. Of course, he was an old man, 82, but still as stocky as ever and amazingly robust. By the way, the Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler was an elite SS division that began as the personal bodyguard of Adolf Hitler. Skipping down and continuing, Klopper glanced at Frank, a calculating look in his eyes. You travel much, Herr Brandenburg? He asked. Quite a bit. My research requires it. Clapper nodded. A decision had been made. Then this is what must happen, he said, again quoting, in a few weeks I shall be going to Madrid to meet with certain Maribor Sol representatives. You will go with me. I, Frank was startled. Genau, exactly. They must know you. It will depend on what they think of you. Your future will depend on it. Whether you will be acknowledged and accepted into one of the most vibrant and active organizations working for our cause, it will be an honor for you if you are. New vistas will be opened for you. As one of us, your work will gain new meaning, new importance. Frank was stunned. Here it was. Here and now, he had a decision to make. Was he ready? But how? Asked Frank. There is a definite procedure in cases like this, Clapper told him. A strict procedure which must be followed for the safety of the organization and for your own safety. We must travel, unquote. Frank's thoughts whirled in his mind. He hardly heard Clapper explain the procedure to him. Secret meeting places, private transportation, blindfolded, body searches, code names, vows of secrecy, a flood of melodrama. Except that this was real. For an eternal moment he sat in silence. He knew why Clapper wanted him to go with him. It was the culmination, after all, of what he had realized more and more strongly as he had pursued his quest. He was being looked upon as new blood to be infused into the old Nazi veins. He had been and was even now being wooed to join the awakening of a new Reich. Many of the important old-time Nazi leaders were old or elderly men. The current cadre of leaders, who managed the enormous resources available to the movement, were mature men. New, young blood was urgently needed. And he, Frank Brandenburg, was in the process of being recruited. What to do? He needed time to think. The neo-Nazi organizations here in Germany and abroad, which one reads so much about, are you? Is the Bormann Group? Is Maribor Sol involved with them? Are they being financially supported by funds in the control of your organization, he asked? Clapper smiled a thin, non-committal smile. He regarded Frank with hooded eyes. Do not ask too many questions, he said. Not just yet. He shrugged. Figure it out for yourself, unquote. And skipping down, keep your trap shut. No use providing a welcome mat for trouble. That, by the way, was Clapper addressing Frank Brandenburg. Now, later, Frank Brandenburg was sent by Medard Clapper to talk with an art expert named George Stein, who had served with the Third Reich in Poland. George Stein, again an art expert and someone who was quite familiar with looted works of art that were stolen by the Third Reich, was, among other things, one of the experts on the post-World War II fate of the Amber Room. He was visited by Frank Brandenburg, and the following discussion took place. And again, this is a discussion between Frank Brandenburg and George Stein, Brandenburg having been sent to George Stein by Medard Klopper, the Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler veteran allegedly associated with the Bormann Group. Continuing with Quest, Searching for the Truth of Germany's Nazi Past by Ib Melchior and Frank Brandenburg, of the Stein-Brandenburg conversation. And here's where we're going to get back to the subject of the Amber Room of Melchior and Brandenburg. Right. Speaking of Stein, he stopped his agitated pacing in front of Frank and fixed him with his eyes. "And now, Herr Brandenburg," he said firmly, "what did your friend in Karlsruhe, Klopper, Medard Klopper, was it? What did he say about the Amber Room?" "He simply said that his organization might have uncovered a lead as to where it is," Frank told him. A look of apprehension suddenly clouded Stein's face. "Organization," he said. "What organization?" "He referred to it as the Bormann Group," Frank said. He thought it was best to leave out Maribor Sol for now. Stein sat down. He rubbed his temples in a circular motion with the thumb and middle finger of his left hand. He looked up at Frank, a trace of worry in his eyes. "Now I know why you are here," he said. "Now I know why Herr Klopper sent you to me." "Why?" asked Frank. "The Bormann Group," Stein said. "I know there are such groups, powerful groups, groups of old and new Nazis. They, too, want to find the Amber Room. The financial bonanza to them would be immense. If Herr Klopper represents such a group, a strong..." "He does," Frank said. He had decided to reveal whatever he knew to Stein. Klopper could not fault him for doing so, having sent him to see the man himself. Anyway, what if he did? Stein gave him a quick glance. "You are certain of that?" he asked sharply. "I am. Klopper represents an organization of Nazis called Maribor Sol," Frank told him, again quoting, "an organization which he claims is headed by Martin Bormann himself," unquote. Stein nodded. "I have suspected something like that," he said. "I never accepted the claim that the Reichsleiter died in Berlin. Whatever old bones they dug up, and if he did not, he would have been certain to gather a group, an organization around him. Apparently, he has," unquote. "But why should Klopper send me to see you?" "It is evident, Herr Brandenburg," Stein answered him soberly. My investigations concerning the Amber Room and what has become of it are well known." Skipping down. "For what purpose?" Frank was beginning to feel uneasy. "It does not make sense." "But it does, Herr Brandenburg, it does. Those people do not do things the straightforward way. I have had marginal dealings with other such individuals and groups before. I know. You were sent here as a messenger, Herr Brandenburg, as an intermediary, if you wish, either with a guarded invitation for me to collaborate with them in the further search for the treasure, or with a warning," unquote. "What do you mean, warning?" Frank asked. Stein ignored his question. "What you must do now," he said, "is this. You must return to Karlsruhe, you must see your Medard Klopper, and you must convey to him my willingness to meet with him to discuss the possibility of my collaboration with Maribor Sol in the search for the Amber Room. By combining our knowledge and our new leads, ein verstanden, agreed?" Frank stared at him. "Herr Stein," he said, "I am not a messenger or an intermediary in this matter, or in any other matter pertaining to Maribor Sol. I am not one of their couriers," unquote. Stein contemplated him, an ironic little smile on his deformed lips. "Whether you want to be or not," he said, "you already are one of them. Already you have been used as a messenger to me, and now you will have to carry my answer back to them. They will expect it," unquote. "I must decline, Herr Stein," Frank said, increasingly ill at ease. "I am a researcher, a seeker of facts. I am not a participant," unquote. Stein frowned at him. "I would caution you not to cross them," he said slowly. It is a dangerous game you play. There are still among them those who will kill, unquote. He looked earnestly at Frank. You must understand, he said solemnly, again quoting, even though the old Nazis in the organization such as your Marie Borsol are dying out, new ones, young ones such as you, step into their footsteps. You must realize that they are motivated by fanatic beliefs. They see in you someone who is ready to join the pool of young blood to be infused with their beliefs, shaped in the image of the old guard, ready to take their places. Your life, from the day you do, will be set on a new course, a course that they firmly believe will see the rise of a new Reich, soaring from the ashes of the humiliation and the degradation of the old, like an ironclad phoenix to rule the world with absolute power, guided by the mighty ideals of Adolf Hitler, a world that will be theirs, unquote. He stopped. He looked hard at Frank. Quote, be not deceived by the flowery speech, the fanatic goals, Herr Brandenburg. Those are words from the mouths of the very people you are dealing with even now, unquote. Frank sat silent. For the first time, the full realization of how deeply he had become involved in his project surged through him like an icy bolt. He was no longer just looking for information. He was becoming part of the whole unsavory cabal. It was time to call a stop to it before it was too late. Do not take my warning lightly, Stein cautioned him, again quoting, the matter in which you have involved yourself, the struggle to find the missing Amber Room, is a dangerous matter. I myself have often been warned. Everyone knows of the dangers. Even the old abbot of a monastery to which my inquiries led said to me, give it up, Herr Stein. Die in bed, and not with a bullet in your back, unquote. Frank stood up. Thank you for your time, he said, and the information you have given me. But I must categorically decline any active involvement on my part with the activities of Marie Borsol or you, unquote. As he walked away from the Stein house, he made up his mind that his quest had come to an end. It had to. The people he was dealing with would eventually demand commitments from him, commitments he was not prepared to make. He did not want to dwell on what might happen to him should he refuse their requests, unquote. And a hint of what might have happened to Frank Brandenburg can be gleaned from what happened to George Stein at the hands of who knows who in a footnote to that passage. A year later, George Stein was found murdered in a forest near Munich, naked and stabbed to death with two table knives that were still stuck in his body. Who murdered him and why is anybody's guess, but certainly the Bormann organization is one of the possibilities that has to be seriously considered in light of the fact that Stein viewed Frank Brandenburg as an emissary from the Bormann organization, or Marie Borsol, and that obviously George Stein declined collaboration. I have alluded to the Bormann organization in numerous past broadcasts that are available from Spitfire, and I have referred to it as the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization. The fate of George Stein, among others, may very well bear witness to just how deadly this remarkable organization is. Another subject for speculation is the possible role that the events discussed in this book that I've been accessing, again, the book called Quest, subtitled Searching for the Truth of Germany's Nazi Past, co-authored by Ib Melchior and Frank Brandenburg, published in softcover by the Presidio Press, copyright 1990. The ISBN number is 0-89141-532/1. One of the possibilities that needs to be evaluated, too, is the extent to which the events discussed in the book Quest that I've been accessing for the bulk of this broadcast may have played in the discovery and return to Russia of at least part of the Amber Room. Recall that we began the program with an article that I'm going to reprise in part right now. This from the San Jose Mercury News of Friday, April 28th of the year 2000. This is an AP story, Dateline Moscow, headlined, Germany Returning Russian Treasure. One of two pieces known to still exist from Peter the Great's famed Amber Room was returned by Germany on Thursday, more than half a century after being stolen by retreating Nazi troops, the ETAR-TASS news agency reported. The piece, an elaborate mosaic of amber, came to Moscow aboard a special plane also carrying German Culture Minister Michael Naumann, the agency reported. And skipping down, Nazi soldiers looted the palace in World War II and stripped the amber room bare as they retreated from their failed campaign against Stalinist Russia. The room's contents were moved to a castle in Königsberg, now the Russian city of Kaliningrad, and disappeared from there in 1945. The German woman who bought the chest recognized it in a television report and turned it over to authorities in 1997. It is not known how much she paid for it. So whether there is any connection between the events discussed in this article and the events that are portrayed in the book Quest by Frank Brandenburg is obviously a matter for speculation. Bear in mind that German Culture Minister Michael Naumann is the former head of Henry Holt and Company, functioning in that position for the von Holtzbrinck firm, one of the two Nazi-linked firms that dominate American publishing. That concludes this broadcast. This has been For the Record, program number 234, Tales of the Amber Room, recorded on July 2nd of the year 2000. This and the other tapes that I've recorded over the years are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, capital S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, located at P.O. Box 1179, Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address is mail@spitfirelist.com. Visit the website at www.spitfirelist.com, one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E-L-I-S-T.com. And don't forget to follow along on the For the Record section descriptions, mini article-length descriptions of the various For the Record segments as you listen to them on the radio. That concludes this broadcast. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.